And we'll move on to our next case, Gao v. Gonzalez. Mr. Payne.
May it please the court, for the petitioner Gao, this is Douglas B. Payne. I would emphasize that this case involves a very severe lack of effective representation at the immigration court. Obviously the issue is whether the petitioner made a diligent effort to reopen these proceedings, and as I've stated in the brief, he did as soon as he had a basis to do so. Prior to the year 2004, there is really no marker for him to question what was done below. His attorney at the immigration court effectively deceived him about what had been done. She deceived him about her lack of diligence in filing his application for asylum with the court. She told him she could appeal it. That's absolutely absurd. Based upon her statement to the court back in 1999, April 15th, 1999, he was requesting the only relief of withdrawing his application for asylum. The court granted that relief. Further, the attorney waived any appeal from that decision. Based upon his youth, his lack of cultural understanding of what was going on with him, he had no reason to believe that he had any recourse. Once he had married a United States citizen and she had filed a petition to classify him as a relative, they consulted an attorney and found out that perhaps the former proceedings could be reopened. The BIA, in its decision, nevertheless states that he did not exercise due diligence in seeking to reopen his proceedings. Now, in my brief, it is true I do raise an argument that was not raised to the BIA, but does follow from the BIA's decision. And that, of course, is the decision of the immigration judge of April 15th, 1999, is not self-executing. It requires a further decision by the district director, then of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, now it would be the Department of Homeland Security, notifying Gao to surrender for removal from the United States. There is no evidence in the record that was ever done. So until 2004, Gao had no reason to believe that either that he should move to reopen his proceedings, or that if he didn't do so, he would be in trouble with the government because the government didn't seek him out. Once he did that, he learned eventually that his former attorney had ill-served him and had failed to file in a timely or compliant manner his application for asylum. That should have been done years previously, in 1997. It wasn't done, so that when he came to his final court hearing before the immigration judge, his attorney told him he had no case. He should just leave the United States, or at least promise to do so. Now, at this point in time, of course, his circumstances have changed very considerably. That is not gaming the system. It is a matter of life. He is married to an American citizen spouse. He has two American citizen children. The question is, what does the government want to do with him?
You can't have a system where you're ordered to leave, you don't leave, instead you create a family, then use that as the basis for staying.
Absolutely, Your Honor. However, the April 15th, 1999 order does not order him to leave. It orders him to leave only if the district director tells him to leave. And that was never done. So it is not, I would submit, it's not gaming the system. He is compliant, but the system did not require him to leave. Now he has two American citizen children. What does the government want to do? Eventually, it's very probable that he would be approved to be a legal permanent resident. Does the government want to remove him for 1, 2, or 3 years and let his infant children fare as they can here in the United States? They're American citizens. Why should they be required to relocate? relocate to a foreign country.
The time lapse, as I understand it, between the removal order and the motion to reopen is something like 5 years, is that right?
That's correct.
And under what definition of due diligence would that be satisfactory?
Well, I think in terms of the fact that he did get married to an American citizen.
But that has nothing to do with due diligence.
Yeah.
I mean, those you're arguing essentially equitable arguments that he should be treated leniently or receive the grace of the government, etc. But that has nothing to do with his own due diligence. He waited 5 years.
The question, I think, has to be what would trigger the due diligence? Why would he believe that he was...
He was ordered removed.
He agreed to withdraw his application for asylum, for admission after he thought he was going to be applying for asylum. And I think that
He didn't think he was still applying for asylum after he had withdrawn
No, I don't think so.
So he was removable, ordered removed, withdrew his application for asylum.
What more is
necessary to start the clock running on a due diligence analysis?
Well, I think there had to be a second notification from the government as to exactly
what that requirement.
Simply by the terms of the 1999 order of the immigration judge, which requires...
I said, where is that requirement that you're speaking of, that he has to be notified twice?
I think the order of April 15th, 1999.
I understand that. He's ordered to depart. The date isn't fixed. But he knows that he's illegally in the United States. And if he wants to, if he wants further relief, he better pursue it. Not just change his status by getting married and having children.
Well, I think he felt that as long as he was not notified to leave the United States, he was allowed to be in the United States. And as that condition...
Yeah, sure, but as soon as he get the notice, he'd be out, right? So if he wants to change his status, he has to do something, not just wait until they catch up with him.
Well, again, I think this is complicated by the fact of his youth and by the fact of his...
Wasn't he ordered at the hearing to leave? And didn't he say that he was going to agree to leave?
No, he withdrew his application for asylum.
Yeah.
He withdrew his application for asylum, and he also withdrew his application for admission to the United States. And that led to the order which stated that when the district director of the then INS directed him to leave, he would leave, either before or after that.
What proof do you have of that?
Of what?
That he was advised that he would be ordered again.
The order of April 15th, 1999, which specifically states that he will leave the United States on or before the date set by the district director. That's the order of the immigration judge.
He wasn't told that at the time.
I'm not sure what he was told. He was certainly not told that his attorney had lost his opportunity for asylum. That is true.
And he was told to leave then.
I'm not sure his attorney told him that. I don't know what his attorney... His attorney told him she could appeal for him, which is crazy, because the order indicates both sides agreed to waive appeal. So there was a great deal of deception going on in the relationship of attorney and client.
It's your position that no departure order was ever issued?
None has been cited by the government.
Well, did you... I think you've acknowledged you didn't raise this
below
true. In the
Not
agency.
Below.
So you
Not
didn't
below.
You didn't put the government to its proof of producing the departure order or claim that he had never received such an order or anything of that nature.
Well, that's true, except that to be rational, the BIA would have to read the IJ's decision, the immigration judge's decision, and that decision naturally states that there has to be a further direction from the district director, and there is no such direction in the record, so that the BIA's decision is not rational. It doesn't ask, has the petitioner complied with the order? Because if it did, it would have to say, on the face of the record, he has. He has not overstayed in direction from the district director to leave the United States. And, Your Honors, I think the case, this case is, has been changed by the recent decision of this court in Chun versus Gonzalez, docket 063980, decided June 11th of this year, which is remanding that case back to the BIA for a determination as to whether people in the United States who are directed to remove but who have two United States citizen children will face persecution in China, so that the fact that the petitioner has two U.S. citizen children now is an exacerbating element, because he would probably or quite possibly face persecution in China now. And that is our argument, that his circumstances have changed and the law apparently will change as to people in his position.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Payne. Minnick?
Good morning. May it please the Court, William Minnick representing the respondent. The Board acted within its discretion in determining the petitioner failed to demonstrate due diligence. By petitioner's own account, his confidence in his attorney's performance was shaken immediately after the April 15th, 99 hearing. That's record at 178, paragraph 12. But he waited 5 years to request reopening. Petitioner's shaken confidence in his attorney's performance in April 1999 triggered a duty of inquiry on his part to investigate whether he had been subject to ineffective assistance of counsel. But instead, he did nothing for 5 years. Petitioner did not explain in his affidavit why he waited or what he did in the period from 1999 to 2004. And accordingly, he failed to act with due diligence. The test for equitable tolling is whether the claimant could have reasonably been expected to file earlier. Petitioner's affidavit submitted with his second motion to reopen indicates that his confidence in his attorney's performance was shaken as early as April 15, 1999, after they returned from the immigration hearing. And this shaken confidence triggered a duty of inquiry on his part to investigate whether he had been subject to ineffective assistance of counsel. The affidavit that petitioner submitted simply goes from April 15, 1999 in paragraph 12 to paragraph 14, where it's 2004. In other words, there's no evidence in the record what, if anything, petitioner did. And there's no explanation of why he didn't act on the shaken confidence. Moreover, here, the claimed ineffectiveness of counsel was not the cause of the lateness of his motion. Petitioner's claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, that counsel was ineffective in 1998 for failing to timely file the asylum application, is irrelevant to the lateness of his second motion to reopen. Because if petitioner had simply acted on his shaken confidence, investigated his suspicions by getting a second opinion of counsel's performance, he would have filed a motion to reopen within the 90-day deadline. Just addressing the issue of the DHS departure order. This isn't a document he's said all along that this isn't in the DHS's report order isn't in the record. This isn't a document that would be in the record, because this would be a letter from DHS to the petitioner. In other words, it isn't a document that would have been filed in immigration court or with the board, so it isn't a document that would be in the record. Nevertheless, as petitioner essentially conceded, he did not raise this before the board, so this court lacks jurisdiction to consider it. And not only didn't he raise it before the board in his appeal brief, he conceded that he did not leave the United States in accordance with the IJ's order. That's record at 19. And even assuming jurisdiction, we would say it's a non-issue, because it still doesn't explain the lateness of his motion. In other words, he had a duty to investigate once his confidence was shaken, because he was present at the hearing. He didn't need to get a report date from DHS to start his due diligence and start investigating. In conclusion, the board acted within its discretion in determining petitioner failed to demonstrate due diligence. He's not entitled to equitable tolling, and we ask the court to deny the petition.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Minnick.
Thank you, Your Honor.